Good morning. So fierce Christianity, what's that? This is something that I've been developing in myself. It's something that I think that if I don't keep, then I'm in trouble. So I'd like to tell you about it. I'd like to explain it, what I think it is, and hopefully we'll be able to have an honest discussion with ourselves today. What we just read, about a man named Ebed-Melech in Jeremiah 38. This man was a foreign national in Jerusalem at a time of war where they were losing the war. And his friend, Jeremiah, was a dissident. His friend Jeremiah was saying, surrender to the enemy. That got him in trouble. But this man, Ebed-Melech, decided to defend this dissident. Now, would you say that characterizes a weak man or a strong man? Do you see that characterizes someone who would just lay down under pressure or someone who may be able to be fierce when they need to be? We read about Zedekiah, a king in the city at war. And the message to Zedekiah was, surrender. Because by doing that, you'll save your own soul. The message to Zedekiah was, you have to be trusting in God, even though it'll make you appear weak. It'll make you appear to be something that you don't want to look like. And then we have the disciples who were sent out without a plan. Jesus says, don't take any don't prepare anything, don't take anything that you think you'll need, just go. And they were told that they were not to compromise truth for something that would look like peace, but wouldn't be. So for the next 15 minutes or so, I invite every one of you to be a little bit dangerous. Just a little bit. I'm not talking T-Rex is chasing after my Jeep sort of dangerous. I'm not talking about jumping in a pool wearing a tuxedo sort of dangerous. I'm talking about dangerous enough to be honest. Dangerous enough to stir up something inside of our chests. And let's see what happens. Just see what happens. Dangerous enough to write something down that we may be telling ourselves or thinking, but not necessarily listening to. So you'll find that if you're in a seat where there's nothing in front of you, then you have a little index card below underneath your seat. And if you have seats in front of you, there's a little cubby hole in there where you've got an index card. And we had a pen on every other seat at the beginning today. So it's not a quiz. I'm not going to be collecting them. It's just something for you. And I would challenge you to try this out, because I think it'll work. So, what's dangerous? What's dangerous here? Classic dangerous is, does this make me look fat? Right? Why? We automatically know what that means, right? Now, comedians use it all the time because it's hilarious, but not hilarious. And it's a perfect example of a situation where the words that someone is saying is not really portraying the meaning that they have in their head. And for us, the words that we say very often don't ask the question to which we seek an answer. So, fierce Christianity, the first step. My question and your question. For some people, the question that we have that is underlying everything else that we ask is, am I wanted? Do people value me? Does God value me? Does God exist? And if so, why do I sometimes feel that I'm not wanted? For others, the question is, do I have what it takes? In any given situation, do I have what I need? Will I fail? Will I look bad? Will I be embarrassed? And if so, if I do have what it takes, why is it such a struggle? So the answer to both those questions, am I wanted and do I have what it takes, is most definitely yes. You do have what it takes. And regardless of what people in your life may have told you or demonstrated to you, you are wanted by a God who has decided to prioritize you above something that would make him comfortable. God prioritized our salvation over his own comfort, when he gave his son. So we're told, be perfect. Do I have what it takes to be perfect? Wow. Oh, my goodness. And the question that I'd like to ask, I like getting people to participate. That way we know who's asleep and who's not. And I don't know, when I'm sitting down, I like to be a little more active. So we're going to work with our initial reactions today. I'm going to ask you a question, and if your initial reaction is yes, throw your hand up. And if your initial reaction is no, leave it, and we'll come to that in a second. So, would God ask you to do something that he knew you couldn't do? Yes. No. We got four yeses, how many no's? And a whole bunch of undecideds, okay? So my first reaction is, no, God wouldn't ask me to do something he knew I couldn't do. That's not fair. Right? But in researching, I think the answer is yeah, he would, and he does. The law of Moses, he set up a system for his chosen people, Israel, that he knew wasn't going to work the way they thought it should work. Right? The law was perfect, but because it was through the flesh, they couldn't really follow it. So God set them up for failure? How does that work? I mean, has God set me up for failure? No. Next question is Mike Sternett. I'm going to pick on Mike. Sorry, Mike. We have a lot of fun going way too fast over train tracks. So I'm going to pick on. Sorry, Eric. But Mike, do you think that you could live a sinless life? No. The answer to that, I mean, when I think that, I think no. But in order to answer that, really, we start doing research on, okay, what's the nature of man? What's my experience? How can we figure this out? And we get into the ontology of Christ. You know, could Jesus have sinned? Okay, so we're going to have a 400-year debate about whether how much he was like God. And then we're going to split the church because of the difference of one letter in a Greek word that means kind of like God or all like God, right? So not that it's not necessary to do that, but that's not really the question. The question, could Jesus have sinned, and what's his nature, what's my nature? That's the question I'm asking, but that's not what I want to know. What I want to know is, do I have what it takes? What I want to know is God there? And can he help? And the answer to both those questions is yes. But for some reason, the answer to can I live a sinless life is no. I think it's a question of our perspective. If I think 70 years, I know that from my experience that I don't really have what it takes. God's kind of set up a situation where it's really difficult and I've kind of screwed up. But the comforting thing is that we're not alone in that. He set up a situation where the statement is, he subjected the creature to vanity in hope that they might be redeemed. So we need something. We need help. But first, we need the fierceness to try. So where is the fierceness in our religion? Many times, as Christians, we're taught to be nice, to sit in the rows and not fall asleep. But I found that doesn't always do what I expected it to do. And one of the most helpful things that I found was Jeff Jones asked me a couple years ago. We were talking about something. I remember what it was. And Jeff says, "How's that working for you?" It's a simple question, right? Something I'm trying to do. How's it working? Well, it's kind of not working. Well, better try to change it up a little bit. That's something that's so simple, but we gloss over that. So the fierceness that is necessary for our walk with God, the fierceness that is necessary to first be honest, second, to approach God, and third, to find some success, is one of the great biblical paradoxes that I've left unexplored. Maybe you have as well. We have a passage about Jesus from Isaiah 53. Let's take a look at Isaiah 53, verse 7. Oh, by the way, the note cards, we're going to do something specific with those later, so you can write down them right now, other things if you like, but you don't have to. Isaiah 53, verse 7, he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shears is dumb, so he openeth not his mouth. Is this Jesus the passive, Jesus the unassuming, or Jesus the lamb? Verses, John 2, starting at verse 14. Jesus found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. When he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them out of the temple and the sheep and the oxen and poured out the changers' money and overthrew the tables and said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence, make not my Father's house a house of merchandise. And the disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Here we see Jesus the reformer, Jesus violent, Jesus the lion. Another seeming contradiction. The meek shall inherit the earth. Matthew 5, verse 5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Versus Paul's statement about the spirit of fear. In 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, he says, for God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and of a sound mind. So which is it? Are the two irreconcilable? I think they're not. And I think for the next few minutes, I'd like to focus on that fierceness. So, the statement that I'm going to make, which you may disagree with, but that's okay. There will be situations in your life where a fierceness is needed to be a godly person. Make no mistake, fierce Christianity does not make fierce Christians. Fierce Christianity makes Christians who are able to do what they think they need to do. It's quite simple. Do we have the courage to break something if it's not working and make it anew? Do we have the courage to listen to where God may be speaking to us in our lives and hear that He may be saying, you might want to be somewhere else? Prodigal son wakes up, comes to himself in a pigsty, and he hears God's voice, and God's voice says, get out of there. So do we have the courage to be rather than to appear? Zedekiah was given that choice. Be a good king, save your people, surrender, and you'll live, or appear to be strong for your princes. But more than having the courage to be rather than to appear, do we know that we have the permission to be rather than to appear? Is that something that we allow ourselves to think? That if I, to be honest with myself, can I be something that doesn't look like I want to look? That's rough. So there's something in all of our lives that needs to be done. I can't tell you what it is. Many times it'll stem from that question. Do I have what it takes? Or do I feel wanted? So this is where the note cards will come in. I'm going to make three assumptions about everybody in the room and behind the glass, because it's the same room and I care about everybody. I'm going to assume that we're not all perfect, or we're all not perfect. I'm going to assume that all of us have some sort of internal dialogue that goes on. Right? And I'm going to assume that we can all write down a sentence. So you all have one card that's got two sides on it. By the end of this, I'd like the card to be in your pocket, or if you don't have pockets, in your purse. Pocket's better than Bible case, because pocket, you tend to see it more than Bible case. So what we're going to do is, I'm going to ask you to take three deep breaths, and then say something in your head. And then something's going to pop into your head, right? A statement, an image, something is going to pop into your mind, and I want you to write it down as fast as you can. And so, real quick, just relax. Three deep breaths. Everyone's got one of the cards. Everyone's got a pen. If not, seriously, I'll wait. That's fine. We can get them. Anybody not have something to write with and something to write on? Cool. There should be some in the kitchen, too, if you can hear me. Say this to yourself. In my life, I'm doing everything that I think is good for me, except... And something just came into your head. Write it down. Write it down as fast as you can. Grab that statement. Think about it. Be fierce. Be fierce for now. You want to sit back. You know, you want to not write it down. It could be embarrassing. It could be dangerous. It could be something you don't know what to do with. But write it down. You don't have to show me. You don't have to show anybody else. You could tear it up, throw it away. It doesn't matter. But write it down. And when everyone's done writing, we'll turn the card over. And we'll do it again with a different question or a different statement. So, deep breaths, relax. We're going to be okay. Assuming that God exists and He says who He is, everything that I do makes Him happy, except, and then something pops into your head. Right? Something's there. Grab it, hold on to it, write it down, be fierce. Allow yourself to be honest with it. You can throw it away. Don't need to tell me, don't need to tell anybody else. Just do that. So this is our conscience. We've just exposed ourselves to what we think. You'll notice that the first statement, in my life, I'm doing everything that I think is good for me, except, right? That what comes after that is something that we could do. It could be simple. It could be profound. It could be clean my room. It could be get a car wash. Whatever it was, it doesn't have to be huge. It's whatever it is that you think. The second one is a little deeper. Assuming God exists and He is who He says He is, everything that I do makes Him happy, except, right? That's something that we've taken our idea of God and we said, okay, this is what I could do. All right. So the statements that we have on those cards might be dangerous. It might require us to do something that makes us look bad. It might require us to do something that's uncomfortable. I have a lot of respect for Jen who is willing to come in wearing a funny white thing and get down and get wet. And then know that everyone's waiting for her. You know, that's not easy. I've done that. I think it took me like 6 hymns to get back, Ben, was it? It was ridiculous. But being good is not always safe. And being safe is not always good. That's something that I'm learning. You know, I got a stable job, and I'm one of the safest people around. Except for the motorcycle, which is nice. But our job is to find what our conscience tells us and do it. It might not be planned. It might put us in a place where things are hard, but our job is to do that. Micah 6, verse 6. Wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before Him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for a transgression? Fruit of my body, for the sin of my soul. He has showed thee, O man, what is good, what the Lord requires of you, but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. I think most of us never get past the do justly part. Most of us never get past the idea that we can be one person everywhere. Most of us never get past the idea that to do justly, I can be consistent. And when I can't, God can. Because He hasn't told me what's good and what He requires of me. He's shown me what's good. He's shown me because that's who He is. God is not a man that He should lie. God cares for me. God cares for you. And so, the answer, yes, you have what it takes. But if for some strange reason you think you don't, God does. And He's willing to give it to you. So the fierceness that I'm talking about in terms of fierce Christianity is the fierceness to be honest with yourself, fierceness to find what it is that you can do. The fierceness is to try it out. Because there are no real guarantees in this life. We like to think there are. We have insurance. We've got 401ks. We've got guarantees, but there's no guarantee here. But if I could tell you that by drinking my wonder drink, you could be faster than Michael Phelps in 4 years and guarantee that, you know, you'd probably do it. But if I could tell you that by doing the one possibly completely inane little thing on your card, you have a chance at pleasing the creator of the universe. You have a chance at being more consistent in yourself. You have a chance, no guarantee, but you have a chance of doing something you've never done before. Would you do it? So we know, friends, that this fierceness is necessary, but it doesn't always do the job. But we need that fierceness, we need that dedication, that strength, in order to make meekness a choice rather than a default. We need to have that strength to make obedience a choice rather than to make weakness our default mode of operation. Because we know that God's strength is made perfect in weakness. And we will recognize that. Because no matter how fierce we are the flesh. But I think how amazing it would be to turn to Hebrews 4, verse 16. I love this one. It's great. I never understood it. How amazing would it be to say, seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. We don't have a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted, like as we are, yet without sin. And as we complete our service today by remembering Jesus and the things that he's done, the fierceness he was able to exhibit with respect to his temptations, the fierceness he was able to exhibit in order to be loving in an appropriate way, in a constructive way for his disciples and for us, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time when that fierceness is not enough.